Welcome to Cabronas y Chingonas, a podcast where we talk about queer and Latinx topics such as...
I will say, for example, that there is a film that's queer but not Latinx, which is Brokeback Mountain, based on a true story of some Latino cowboys. And that always kind of broke my heart because I think not just proper representation of the LGBTQ community matters, but our Latinx stories matter. You know, it's kind of like that Argo problem that we had where it's such a great story. Why didn't we just say the hero was Latinx?
That's so trash. I mean, they were actually Latinos.
I didn't even know about Brokeback Mountain being that way. I didn't even know this story. This is incredible. And then Argo, that was pretty depressing when I found that out. And I was like, Ben Affleck, right?
Who is and, it? Ben Affleck. And one of the most iconic films, A Few Good Men, that's also based on a Latino army lawyer, right?
Jeez.
Service. Like Tom Cruise's character. Mm-hmm. He's supposed to be Latinx.
Quit whitewashing this stuff, guys.
Oh, yeah. Whitewashing. You can't handle the truth, people.
What up, cabrona?
What's poppin', chingona? How you feeling?
I'm feeling great here at Molcajete Studios. Thank you so much to Luis for letting us record here.
You're literally the best person. We adore you.
You're the best. And we're sitting here next to a legend, the one, the only.
The iconic.
Rafael Agustin.
Hey. I was like, wait, who?
Thank you so much for being here. I want to let everybody who somehow doesn't know who you are know a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, sure. My name is Rafael Agustin. I am one of the writers on Jane the Virgin. I'm also the executive director of the Latino Film Institute, which oversees both LALIF, the Los Angeles Latino International Film Festival, and the Youth Cinema Project, which is a statewide project-based learning program that teaches our communities of color, starting at fourth grade, the skill set of filmmaking.
That's amazing.
And not just wow. To make filmmakers, but to actually help our community go to college. That's essentially like our ultimate goal.
Well, that's great.
You're an activist, fantastic. Basically.
Well, we all are, and we all should be, right?
Yes.
For yeah. Sure.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, man. I definitely want to get into both of those organizations. Yeah. But, yeah, let's throw it back.
Let's take it back.
Like, when I was, like, undocumented, yeah. That far back?
Yeah. Like,
where were you?
Wait, the laws can't find you, right? Like, good. The laws ain't going to find you,
we'll fight them.
No, we're good.
We got this. But yeah, I'd love to know where you're from and where you came, what you your upbringing
was like. I was born in Ecuador, South America. Came to the U.S. when I was 7 years old, straight to Los Angeles. It was a little problematic for me because growing up, whenever there was a celebration, we had mariachis. So I grew up thinking mariachis were like from Ecuador and not from Mexico. So when I moved to LA and met my Mexican friends listening to mariachi, I was like, oh, you listen to Ecuadorian mariachis too? That's so cool. Yeah, that's a reality check. And then I just lived my normal middle class working family life until I graduated from high school. I applied to go to college, discovered I was undocumented, and my whole world just came crashing down on me. And then I began my process to try to become a permanent resident while trying to find a way to pay for higher education, which is nearly impossible if you can't get financial aid and all these scholarships or you're just not born into privilege. And it was actually my immigration problems that led me to entertainment because I come from a long line of like doctors and lawyers. So I thought that would be my route. But when I was taking all these classes in my community college, I took all these credits because I didn't know how long my immigration limbo was going to last. And the last possible class that I didn't want to take was a theater class. And I was like, okay, I'll take this class. And that's how I got into it. And eventually I transferred into UCLA where I went to the School of Theater, Film, and Television. I wrote a show that toured the nation for 8 years called NWC, which stands for Wetback Chink. Mm. And it was like a political... autobiographical comedy that we felt created a bunch of social change throughout the United States, but didn't make us rich and famous, so whatever. And then eventually I decided to tell my true life story of how I was an undocumented student. That script got me into Sundance. I became a Sundance fellow, and because of that, I was able to sell it to to CBS Studios, and now I got staffed on Jane the Virgin.
It's amazing. I want to like, I want to go more granular. I'm like, how was it? What did the Sundance Fellowship kind of consist of? What was that all about?
So this is great because I didn't know about it. And the year I applied would have been the third year they ever did this, the episodic TV, because Sundance is so well known for its film work, but not for its television work. For example, the previous years, Barry Jenkins from Moonlight, he was one of the fellows. You know what I mean? So it was brand new. And Sundance, essentially what they were doing was trying to cultivate the next generation of TV storytellers. And no one is doing that, or no one was doing that at the time. So I had this TV script. I didn't know who to send it to or who I can collaborate with. So I sent it to Sundance. And it was such a great experience because they divide the lab into two parts. The first part is you work with showrunners who kind of teach you like the how do you break a story. They mock a writer's room. And then the second part is they bring in executives to teach you like the business side and how to pitch. We don't realize as writers of any kind not the importance of pitching, like how much you have to pitch your idea and your story and your life and your value to a project. It's pretty hard, but it's very fulfilling.
It's such a common misconception. Like everybody thinks, you know, you're a writer, you can just be like secluded in like a cabin in the woods and like write and stuff like that. No, you have to be in front of people and talking to them constantly.
All the time. Mm-hmm. And I mean, you could do that if you want to be a novelist, but it depends. I always tell people like a story wants to express itself a very specific way. Some stories need to be poems. Other stories need to be novels. Some stories, like the stories that you tell, have to be podcasts. But if you want to be an episodic, which is TV storytelling, you have to learn to pitch and you have to collaborate with people because that's what the writer's room is.
Yeah. My day's getting to practice right now.
That's amazing. Because my day is going to be...
hopefully a screenwriter.
That's right. I hope she is.
We'll see what happens. You go to Sundance and... I mean, I'm sure there was more than like one obstacle getting into a writer's room. Did you have to start out as an assistant or anything? Was it just like some really lucky networking?
So the access point to TV writing is those lower level positions. Mm-hmm. Usually a writer's assistant for sure, or a writer's room PA or something like that. Someone gave me this advice once that I like to tell everyone. It's like, just get a job doing anything, even if it's picking up the trash in a production. And once you get that job, slowly move your way to where you want to be. A lot of people are always like, no, I need to wait for that perfect job. It's like, you're out of your freaking mind. Like, you have to get in there, have people get to know you, and they have to start cheering for you to get to where you need to be. I was fortunate enough to leapfrog a lot of that because it's kind of unheard of that I sold a TV show before I ever learned how to write TV. It was kind of stupid. And one of my close friends that I met at La Leaf, which is the Latino Film Festival here in Los Angeles, when we were both young, up and coming, just brown Latinx hustlers in the industry, she went on to become Gina Rodriguez.
And holy shit.
So we always kept in touch. And when I finished the script, I sent it to her, and I was like, yo, this is so right up your alley because it's ghetto and it's wholesome, just like you. Yeah. Like that's me. Let's do this. And when she decided to do it, it was actually Gina who helped open a lot of these doors for me. And I don't feel like I've changed. All that I had was someone to vouch for me. You know what I mean? And I think that's what our community does not have. We don't have enough of us vouching for one another.
I totally feel that.
That's what 100%. I mean, we ride for everyone, and this is
that's why this podcast community, I feel like, can be like almost like a microcosm of what like our entire community could be. Mm-hmm. Because we support each other like to no end.
Hardcore. Like I'm supporting our friends right now. Yeah. So
we always amazing. Do.
And but it's just about creating community and building it, and that's what we're talking about with Aurora Godetto, is like, how do you build community? Mm-hmm. And make it something powerful and start putting our own voices out there for each other.
Well, I will say that I'm here today speaking to you because of Luis, like how mm-hmm. supportive he is mm-hmm. with all of us. And early on so La Leaf obviously was founded by Edward James Olmos. And when he came to me and said, I want to bring back La Leaf because it was gone for like 5 years. I told him, that's cool, but we can't do the old traditional grandpa way of doing a film festival. Not just because that's kind of outdated, but because we're not progressing in film as fast as we should be and as fast as we are in TV or in the digital content creation space. So we had a discussion. I said, listen, I want to bring back La Leaf, but I want to revamp it and make it the mecca of Latinx content. And part of that for me was bringing in podcasts into the mix. So that's why I sat down with Luis and with Linda Garcia. And I said, how do we do this? Like, this is a test run. No one has ever done it. So how do we do it? And we were able to partner up, for example, Latinos Who Lunch at Locatora Radio, so they can interview Tania Saracho from in the cast of Vida. And that was such a huge success. And I think the people from Lionsgate and Stars for Vida, they were just like, oh, we never thought about doing like that podcast route. You know what I mean? So that's what I want to do with La Leaf. I want to embrace more of you all to connect you more to the industry too. And then so that the industry is more connected to our communities, because you are reaching our communities. You know what I mean?
That's, yeah, whenever I went to I went to that panel and everything, and I did think that it was really great how like the intersection of all these types of media that we're producing kind of came together, and it was a beautiful event. So congratulations, that was great. That was a really
that's amazing
great run.
Now you all have to come to La Leaf 2019.
Hey, yeah, absolutely, yes, absolutely. I wanted to grow and I wanted to be like a huge thing, you know what I mean?
I
can't wait for something like that to happen. But while we're talking about writing, or going back to writing, I'd love to know a little bit more about the makeup of the writer's room of Jane the Virgin, because I know it's unique. It's different from many other rooms.
In general, our writer's room is mostly women, which that in itself is revolutionary. It is so incredibly rare. We always highlight those writer's rooms that are mostly women, but we forget that there's like, 400 writer's rooms?
Mm-hmm.
And how many of those are predominantly women? Like 10, 20? That's ridiculous, right?
Very small percentage.
So for that, I know that I'm blessed. I'm blessed that I'm under the tutelage of our creator, Jenny Snyder Ehrman, who is a badass writer. And she is so woke, it's a little like stupid. You know what I mean? So she was conscientious of like making sure she had proper representation in the room, whether it be African-American or LGBTQ or a Latina, because you are telling telenovelas. And then when I got brought on, I know that she was, I think, looking for a Latino writer, because she had Latina writers, but she didn't have a Latino voice in the room. And funny enough, I think when talking to Gina was like, oh, I'm working with this Latino writer. I think you'll like him. So then we met. And
it clicked.
It clicked in a weird way, because when she interviewed me to be staffed, she's like, so do you want to be a staff writer? And I was like, no. It was like the stupidest way of being hired, because I was preparing to sell my show, and I was like, yes, TV, I'm gonna do this, but I had read a statistic that said that there are more minorities and women who create TV shows than there are staffed in TV shows, and I'm talking about the ratio, obviously not the number. Mm-hmm. Right. When I read that, I said, oh, that's an impossible uphill battle that I don't need to be fighting. So I'd rather just be creating the TV shows. I didn't realize how hard that would, that would be. Or,
like, it's still hard as
hell. Yeah, for sure. And I honestly think when I told her that, she just looked at me and was like, oh, you poor bastard. You don't know what you don't know. So I think she was like, okay, I'll help this guy. So the only reason I did it was because I think Jane the Virgin is a very important TV show. Like, if it was a procedural or some other type of, like, you know what I mean, another story, I would have been like, nah, thanks. I got, my activism is more important to me. My community is more important to me. I could always find different ways to make money. And I've always loved to exist outside of the system. You know what I mean? I want Hollywood to come to us. I don't need for us to be begging Hollywood to give us a chance. But I was blessed to get this opportunity. And I knew how privileged I was to have it. So I did it. I took it. I left everything. I didn't leave everything behind. Had long discussions with, for example, with my board of directors. Like, I'm the executive director of this organization.
They
had to, like, vote and approve to let me be able to do this. But they understood what it can do for everyone else. So they did.
That's amazing.
It is amazing. Because I had my own doubts about it. Because Maite had told me that it was a white showrunner. But then I saw the writer's room, and we would have discussions about it.
We had an episode about Jane the Virgin. This is actually kind of weird.
No,
it's very meta.
Tell me.
We kind of came full circle with you telling us that right now, yeah. Because what we were, I don't want to say arguing about, what we were talking about in that episode about was like, you know, the problem with having somebody who having a Latino show with a white showrunner, but at the flip side of it, for me, I was like, I like that. She's making room for all these Latinos to thrive, and just it comes full circle because you're here and you're thriving and you're doing amazing, and that's, you know, in large part because of Jenny. And yeah. I'm like, I can't disregard that. You know what I mean? There's no way you can disregard that.
We need allies.
We need allies, real allies, which she is.
Which she is, yeah. Shout out to Charmed. I'm sorry, everybody, but I really like it.
I haven't seen it.
I like Charmed so much.
I haven't seen Charmed so. Yeah, it's so good. I don't watch TV, so, but yeah.
It's like what Toni Morrison once said is it's not just us being able to tell our own story. She's speaking on from the African American perspective, mm-hmm. but we have to get to a place where other people can tell our stories too, right? Mm-hmm. And a lot of times, because we don't have enough of our own stories, we get upset when someone else comes in to tell it. But in this TV landscape and how this industry works, Jenny telling this story was the absolute best thing that could have happened for us. 100%. Because for a Latina to get to the position she is, we're barely getting there.
We're very behind on that.
We're barely with Tanya and Gloria getting there. You know what I mean? It takes a while because no one's developing our community.
Mm-hmm. There we go. That's what it is. It's about development, and that's what she was telling me. And I was like, okay, we'll see. Like, let's see.
But I'm really. That makes me so happy to know that there's a lot of, you said there's Latinas in your writer's room.
Mm-hmm. Carolina Rivera, who actually is an amazing Mexican writer. Mm-hmm. She's a prolific Mexican TV and film screenwriter who was brought to the U.S. to be able to tell the telenovela element of it.
That's why it feels so really real, cool. too.
And that's why it feels so real. Mm-hmm. And then the other one is Valentina Garza, like a homegirl Cuban-American from Echo Park here in L.A., who came up like in The Simpsons.
Yeah.
She's an amazing comedy like writer. And that's she's one of, the, like, one of my favorite voices in the room. She's the one who was diagnosed with breast cancer. So she brought that story to one of our, to Xiomara, to the character.
Like,
and
that authenticity. Definitely bled through. That's great.
And then when I came into the room, I was obsessed with Alba.
Yeah,
Alba's my grandmother. I don't care what anyone says, and I'm so defensive, and I argue, and I, like, everyone's like, "Damn, Ralph!" I was like, "No, you don't understand." Like, my abuela. Oh my god, my abuela. She's like 93, ooh, and she drinks and dances more than I do.
Shout out to abuela.
Yeah, you know, abuelita, what's up? Hey.
Don't tell me that you were the one behind making sure that Alba only spoke Spanish, because that's amazing. I love that choice.
See, for example, that was Jenny. That's
okay.
Jenny. I mean, all of that happened before I came into the room. Alba was undocumented before I came into the room. But what I was able to bring to the story is help her guide her journey through my lens. And I love doing that. Like, on her path to citizenship, like, there was so much storylines that I was able to pitch on, you know?
That's great. Do you see yourself going on and like either executive producing or show running, anything like that? What's your next goal?
Yeah.
That is such a life crisis that I find myself in right now.
I feel you.
Oh my god! It's because believe it or not, I actually went to UCLA on an acting scholarship, and it was at UCLA when I was like, there are no roles for us. This is bananas. So yeah. I was like, well, then I'm gonna have to write them, and that's how I switched over to start writing. And then I'm like, well, who the hell hires the writers? You know what I mean? So I'm trying to figure out this system so I can, like, break it open. I do think part of my future is going to be to hopefully be on track to be a showrunner. I do have a lot of stories that I want to tell. I have developed a lot of projects. And I keep reaching out to friends of mine because I know a lot of people in the industry. Mm-hmm. And I keep finding gems that I'm like, okay, we're going to develop that. I don't have to write it. Because a lot of times it's more authentic, obviously, for like the person of that community to write it. But I guess like a Judd Apatow, you know, like he finds people and then he brings them up. I want to get to that level. I want to be able just to bring everyone up and amplify voices.
That would be, goal. Yeah, that's great. Like, you know, the way that Jenny Ehrman is like making a space for you. You can go out and make space. We can make space for ourselves.
That's right.
And which is absolutely
allyship. Great. Allyship is what that is.
I mean, it's not even allyship anymore. We got ourselves. We have our own backs in that
creating
case.
Creating community. Like, yeah, that's all I ask every single time from a show is to be able to create community, create opportunity, have more real voices, more Latinx voices.
And that's what the Youth Cinema Project is for me. Mm-hmm. Because I was like, the cavalry is not coming. No one's coming to save us. So we have to save ourselves. So then we created this program mm-hmm. that was going to teach young kids of color how to tell their stories. And that's powerful unto itself. And this film program actually started like doubling reading and writing proficiency and tripling school engagement and creating social emotional empowerment. So it's creating all these side effects that we never knew could exist. And now we're knocking at people's and Hollywood's doors. And we're saying the answer to Oscar is so white is not changing voting regulations. The answer to Oscar is so white is developing community of color at an early age. And we start at 9 years old. At what age do you start?
Right.
And that's why no one can say anything to us. And they slowly, Hollywood is embracing this work. But I'm hoping that this is the true creation of a pipeline of constantly feeding the machinery for our community.
Yeah, that's absolutely great. I mean, for me, I'm thinking like, oh, let's get these people hired like at lower levels so they can work their way up, as you mentioned earlier. Mm-hmm. But like starting them at 9 years old and getting them passionate about telling their stories, that's like next level.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
In 20 years, I can't wait to see what they do. You know?
That's exactly right.
I'm so excited for that.
Right. I am so like, it's scary. Like Mr. Romo's like, if I started at 9 years old, I don't even know where my career would be. And that's
Donald Glover type levels of things. That's what you'd be at.
I mean, I didn't start until like UCLA. Mm-hmm.
Same.
You're right? Like we didn't start until college because it's not even a possibility.
Yeah,
for
in
us.
Your head you're like, God, nurse. Yeah. You know, for me it was like my mom and my dad were always like, nurse. And I'm just like, no, I don't know. So,
no. Did you pass out when you see blood?
A little bit.
That's hilarious. You know all your tattoos.
Yeah, oh God. Honestly, needles. I don't talk about it. Okay. But yeah, it's
that's and then, a, that's and then growing up, we don't see ourselves on. And like,
yes.
The only time I saw like, oh shit, I kind of, you know, I'm feeling this was like Rufio from Hook.
Oh.
And Benny the Jet Rodriguez in Sandlot.
Yeah.
Otherwise, Sandlot. Every like that's hero I wanted one. To be like was like a little white boy or a little white girl. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm.
Is that, would you say, or what is the first time that you saw yourself represented? It doesn't have to be film necessarily, like even in a book, you know what I mean? Like anything.
Anything.
Those two are the examples I remember the most. Mm-hmm. Because, and in my show, NWC, that we toured, we talk about this a lot, how we grew up always admiring and thinking that we were like these white icons, right? Mm-hmm. Like my boy Alan in the show, he's Asian and he grew up thinking he looked like Tom Cruise until one
Isn't
day
that
someone
crazy?
Someone told him you don't look like Tom Cruise because you're a chink.
Damn.
Like, do you know what I mean? Like, what? Can you imagine what that? But what? And I look at the mirror and I see Tom Cruise. Like, how dare you? Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean that's kind of why I think it's representation is so important. And that's why we talk about it so much because like literally like I grew up watching Friends. Like Friends, Ross and Rachel, they raised me, and I'm over here like. I'm not Friends, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, but because you have to look at everything through their eyes, you end up kind of like brainwashed in that way.
Listen, all of us grew up loving Friends. But then we look back now and go like, where the fuck were the people of color in New York?
Nowhere.
Not a single one.
Was I a weirdo? Because like I liked A Different World so much more.
I mean, there was other stuff
you're
that
weirdo.
I liked. A Different World
for
was
sure
like,
you're
like
weirdo.
My favorite shit. Like,
I mean, come on. But everyone was waiting for Roth and Rachel to get.
I mean, you know, I love Friends, but like, I loved A Different World on this way that like, Friends was cool. It was like the thing everybody did, but like, A Different World was like mine. Mm. You know, I was like, look at these like brown people being successful and being in love. Like, I think there's a chance for me, you know, like, so.
We get it. You were woke before the word was even created.
Yes.
All right, we get it.
Exactly.
Get it. You're amazing.
She had like the greatest childhood in the world.
I was like super woke at 8. No, I probably was. Lauryn Hill was my first, Miss Education of Lauryn Hill was my first album. So yeah.
Was it really?
Yeah.
Get out of here.
I'm not lying. My mom was like, begged her for it. I was like, I want that album. 9 years old.
That's so wild. Funny. All so I would funny. Listen to when I was nine was Shakira.
Speaking of which, what deeply influenced you in your childhood? Like, other than Sandlot, like, what were you thinking about when you were nine? I'm sure you weren't thinking about being a writer.
No, not at all. I never wanted to be a writer. That looked like so tedious to me. I didn't even like reading books back then.
Whoa,
really? No, I'm serious. At 9 years old, let me see. I came to this country at 7. So at 9 years old, I was probably trying to learn English. Mm-hmm. The thing is, so here's the funny thing. I still remember being a privileged little white kid in South America. Do you know what I mean? That's so I come here and I'm like this like, you know, minority immigrant. I'm like, wait, what? Like, what's going on right now?
Yeah.
It was a cultural shock. Mm-hmm. So when I joined the gang, I was like the gang accountant. You know, I wasn't like in the... I wasn't throwing down.
You're the consigliere.
No, that's a good movie.
What was the white guy from The Godfather who was like on the side? He was like the lawyer. He wasn't really involved in the business.
Like a Better Call Saul for them or something?
You were that guy.
Oh, was that guy?
Yeah.
That's
so
funny.
That's wild.
I think I was.
Yeah, you're the guy on the side. You're the ones they put to the front. Go, answer the door.
But I got to tell you, American pop culture was everything. It was everything. Like everything growing up.
The golden age of television. I mean, that when that came up, I was growing up, you know what I mean? Or I was already finally conscious. And like, I don't know, the golden age of television was amazing.
Oh, like all the sitcoms, every single one.
Like the 2000s.
Friends. Yes.
But what was I going to ask about? Oh, yeah. So you're also...
Which is why when I decided to tell my life story and when I was developing with one of my mentors and close friends, Lisa Reinhardt, I realized that I wanted to tell it in a the Wonder Years type of way.
Oh, yeah, I saw that.
Because, I mean, that's what I grew up watching. You know what I mean? Like, I could relate. Granted, I didn't grow up in the 50s when that show takes place. But my dad was from that era. Like, I feel like in Ecuador, they were living that. So I was like, I get the Wonder Years.
That's funny.
He's like, I feel seen and understood.
Yeah, totally. I was like, yeah, my dad's that strict. He's crazy.
So I know before you, I guess, really got into writing, you were acting.
Yeah.
How did you, I mean, I know that was probably a bit of a passion because theater was what got you into all of this. So do you want to tell us a little bit about your acting life?
Nothing more than exactly what happened. Like, I got this acting scholarship. What was funny is when I did this play called Roosters, which is about Chicano family, when I did this play in my community college, I didn't know that there was quote-unquote nominees or judges to nominate you to compete for like a state acting competition. So I did this play. I got nominated to go compete at this 800 student competition and I won, and then they sent me to Washington DC to compete at the Kennedy Center for this national acting title, and I fly out there and I'm like 2 blocks away from Homeland Security and I'm like, what the hell am I doing right now?
No, that's super scary.
It was insane. And you know, my parents flew out there to... My parents took their first vacation in this country after 14 years just to go watch me perform at the Kennedy Center.
Oh my God, that my is heart. Support.
Yeah.
That's real support.
That is everything. Oh my God, I can't. So then when I got to UCLA on that acting scholarship, I was like, maybe this is what I should be doing. I don't know. I've always just like, someone told me this once, you have to keep your balance and move towards the opportunity. So that's what I kept doing. I was like, okay, I guess acting is it, so I'll do that. Mm-hmm. And then when I realized I just kept getting cast, the only play at UCLA that I did as the lead role was a play called Short Eyes, which was written by Miguel Piñero, who's a Puerto Rican, but it's a prison drama. Mm. And I was like, oh, the only leads I'm ever going to get are prisoners or gardeners. Oh, and I was like, I can't. That mm-hmm. can't be my life. And that's how Web Acting started
writing.
Yeah, that's how I started writing. That's how that show came to be. It got very popular. We went from a student show to a professional run in downtown Los Angeles at the Los Angeles Theater Center under the auspices of the Latino Theater Company because the artistic director was my mentor, José Luis Valenzuela. And then we went on a national tour, and all that happened in 3 months.
Wow.
That's crazy.
It is.
It's crazy. And the only reason we stopped doing the show in downtown LA because it was selling out every night was because we had finals. You know what I'm saying? So the theater was like, wait, you gonna stop? I was like, yeah, all of us are like study. The first in our families to graduate from college in the United States.
We right. have to, we There's have to no stop. Way you can, that's like a whole other like level to it. Like,
it's another failure. You don't yeah. want it. You're already a writer. You can't not graduate. Like, yeah, like your parents are like, oh, no. It's illegal. You can't do that. That's for real. Oh my goodness.
Man. So then we went on a national tour that was like 7-8 years.
Now you talk a lot about it. I want to know a little bit more about what the show was about and what it consists
NWC?
Of.
NWC?
Mm-hmm, the story. I mean, I yeah, can yeah. kind of grasp it.
Yeah, yeah.
But like from your perspective.
From my perspective, it was, it's a traditionally 3-act structured play, mm-hmm. which starts with the first time we heard these derogatory terms that try to take place of our cultural identity and where we go from there and how we grew. But when people saw it, because it was a comedy, everyone thought it was like an improv show. But it was oh. the same improv every night. You know what I mean? So when we first did it in LA, it truly was just a comedy with kind of like a social significance message under it. But when we started touring the nation and we ended up in places like Kentucky and Pennsylvania and Ohio, it truly became like this
subversive act.
It unintentionally, it became like the race show. Like, everyone must watch this.
Oh, like, if you want to be woke, you better yeah, go watch it.
Yeah, that's yeah. Or sometimes, depending on the audience, like, when people weren't laughing, just staring at us, we're like, what's going on? Like, oh, this was mandatory for every single freshman at the university to watch.
God.
I was like, what the hell? Like, you know, we became like the racial quota, like, oh. in a weird way. So, yeah, to me it was great because I did feel we were creating conversations in every community that we went. But that was never what I thought I was going to be doing. You know what I mean? I thought I was just going to be doing entertainment. Mm-hmm. And I think touring the nation and meeting everyone that America has to offer and telling this story about the concept of race and ethnicity really kind of made me a social justice warrior.
So what you're saying is you've been woke too.
I've been woke, but it took me much longer than you. See what I'm saying? I had to create a play and tour the nation with
oh,
it.
You
were 8 years old. Like, I got this.
What, you only created a play world. And toured the whole United States only, right? Like,
yeah.
Casually. Okay.
And you know what's funny? Like, the Motorcycle Diaries came out at around that time. Oh. And I was like, oh my God, I'm like the Che Guevara of like the United States of America for people of color.
That's hilarious.
That.
Oh my God, that's so funny. And then after 8 years, it was done.
It's not that it was done. It's after 8 years, the message needed to change. The country was changing. This was a very in your face. We got to talk about this. And now that the country's ready to talk about it, so I felt like we were so relevant in the discussion. And then after a while, it's not that we became irrelevant. It's like, how do we then take it to the next level? And then Hollywood came a calling. And that's my first attempt at TV development. And that was the most heartbreaking thing in my life. It really, really hurt to go into trying to develop a story, write a story, and this is television, and not having a clear grasp of what your voice is. Because if you don't know what it is, someone else is going to tell you what it is, and you never want that. So we started working with some very major production companies and networks to develop this. And what came out on the other side of the sausage making machine, because it was us as writers, then there's the executive producers, and then there's the showrunners, and then there's the production company, and then there's the network. And everyone has notes. And unless you know what you want to say, their notes are going to change the content. And what came out on the other side of that sausage making machine was a show that I didn't like, and my name was on it.
Mm.
And when we didn't get picked up to air, it was just not only heartbreaking, but it was a rude awakening that if I'm going to be in this industry and if I'm going to fail, I want to fail because of my decisions. I can't fail because of your decisions.
Mm-hmm.
There's this saying that success has many parents, but failure is an orphan. That's what happened. Like, it failed terribly, and everyone said it's your fault. But I was like, but what? But you said to do this, and you said to do that, and you said to do that. Mm-hmm. They're like, no, it's ultimately your name's on it.
Mm.
And I was like, wow.
That's so tough. Like, just jumping into this industry and then having somebody just kind of like shit all over like your life story, hard your work, life goals, you know?
Yes.
Work, everything. Years
and it was three
years.
Of us. It, like, there was five of us who created the show, two directors, three actors, but it truly was the three actors' life stories. So for them to, like, that's your one shot and you got turned down, really hurt. And that had like 8 years of touring behind it. That had like all the development that we did together. All it. I mean, I didn't think I was gonna come back from that. I was like, that's it for me in television, and I was truly gonna be happy doing theater because theater, I control everything. Like no one could tell me what to do, and the audience tells me if it works or not. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But then I had my second life with the Sundance thing.
People kind of fail upwards sometimes here in Hollywood.
Yeah,
they're like, that didn't work. Let's get you for something
else. No, but it's heartbreaking at first.
Oh, I mean,
but
that's,
then it becomes something else.
Yeah, it kind of worries me because sometimes I think about like, you know, I think some of my best writing is gonna be when I finally like get my shit together. Like, my best writing is gonna be personal. It's gonna be about my life. It's gonna be about my shit. But I'm just like, even though I want to start with that because I know that's what's gonna be the best, I'm worried too because I'm like, what if that goes to the trash bin, you know?
You get up.
But that thing is going to be your best sample to get staffed or to open doors. Yeah. And that's kind of what happened with me.
Right. Well, hopefully it goes that
keep
way.
Failing. I mean, they say, just keep failing and keep getting back up. It's easy to say, hard to do, but I've been this whole year, failing.
Failing.
Getting right back up.
The hard thing about that in this industry and in media is that we're judged in a different lens. So when we fail, that's it. Like, we failed our community. We failed like the next person behind us who will not get that opportunity because that project wasn't that success or that movie didn't make money. That's what's so hard about this industry. And that's why we have to celebrate the successes like the Black Panthers and the Cocos and the Crazy Rich Asians, because they are allowing the second one to happen.
Oh yeah.
Because if those failed, that was it.
Yeah, they were like, oh, if Crazy Rich Asians didn't work, we're never making another. What? How? Why is it that?
I mean,
like,
it's a decent history has proven it. So you know what I mean. So
yeah,
definitely.
I mean, they're in the business of making money. So
look at Tyler Perry. Say what you will about his content, judge his content however you will. But the truth of that was Hollywood was saying Black people don't go to the movies. And Tyler Perry was like, of course they do. I have a theater background and an audience that always goes to my stuff. And they were like, they don't. So he created something outside of Hollywood to prove that Black people will go to the movies.
You can even find those plays. You can even find those plays. They were like sold out everywhere. Everywhere it was just like a DVD, like burnt, like of a Tyler Perry play. 2004, 2002. That's wild.
Wow. That's amazing. I want to move on to the organizations that you work with. So, like La Leaf, Latino Film Institute, U Cinema Project. How did you come to be a part of them?
So, La Leaf, the Los Angeles Latino International Film Festival, I got involved because when I was a student at UCLA, Lupe Ontiveros came into my theater class. Mm-hmm. And Lupe Ontiveros is a very famous actress who, she herself said that she's played over 500 maids in film and TV. She is best known as the woman who killed Selena in the movie Selena. So when she walked into my class and said, you have to volunteer for La Leaf because it's the best place where you'll meet the Latino community and the entertainment industry, I just thought, this woman killed Selena on screen. I should do what she said.
That fear.
Yeah, but she was America Ferrera's mom.
And real women have curves. Yep.
Oh. So,
and
okay,
that's how I'll have to choose to remember her.
Yeah. We're going to remember her that way.
And again, it took Josefina Lopez to write that, to give her that opportunity to perform perhaps her greatest character ever caught on film.
Great film.
So yeah, so I started as a volunteer. I started as a volunteer. I was doing schooling and I came like after school to help out however I could. And I really liked it. It's a real ragtag weird world of like film festival producers and coordinators. It's so interesting. And And I got hired and promoted every year. And I met friends from the international community. And then I was flown out to like Guadalajara to help produce the Guadalajara International Film Festival. That's I was huge. Flown out to Los Cabos to help produce the Los Cabos International Film Festival. I was invited to help produce the San Sebastian International Film Festival. So yeah, over time, I found this other skill set, right? Keep your balance, moves for the opportunity. And I found this skill set of being a producer that I didn't even know I had in me. And all that happened because of La Leaf, because I decided to volunteer and give back.
That's amazing. No, yeah, through this podcast, I found that I'm very good at scheduling.
See? Who would have known? Through touring my show, I found out I was good at scheduling. And that's nothing I'd ever thought I'd be doing. Mm-hmm. But Orson Welles, he once said this quote that I've spent 90% of my life being a hustler, 10% being an artist.
Wow.
You know what's fucked up is that Pitbull also said something around the same thing. He said it's like 90% business, 10% talent. And I was like, yeah, that's probably it. 9% like business, hard work, and the 10% talent.
Yeah. You can apply that to a lot. So I guess
he took that quote from Orson Welles and heard it somewhere and twisted it. That's interesting.
Yeah, you can apply that to a lot. Like we were talking about with writing earlier, it's 90% like pitching and talking to people in writer's room, 10% writing. Like,
I'm surprised at how little. I thought it was like literally so I'd be on my computer writing. It's not. No. It's not. Like, you have to break story together, punch up jokes together, you're boarding together. It's a lot of collaborative work.
Yeah, it's not what it seems.
Yeah, at all.
So that's great. And then the Youth Cinema Project, how did that come to be?
So the Youth Cinema Project was something that was born out of La Leaf. We used to have a youth program where we bust in kids from all around the Los Angeles Unified School District to come watch films at La Leaf. And that was our way of promoting literacy, because we're forcing kids to watch movies in Spanish or in Portuguese with English subtitles. And it was the teachers who were like, yo, you're actually making these kids read. These kids never read. So then we started like developing what that meant. And then when the economic downturn came and La Leaf had to close its doors, Mr. Ramos was conscientious that the only thing he wanted to save was the youth program. So then we decided, as opposed to bringing the schools to Hollywood, we'll bring Hollywood to the schools. And that's how the program started. And it started as an after-school program, which then the superintendents themselves were like, forget this after-school stuff. Put it during the school day and watch how it affects the rest of their schooling.
Wow.
Yeah, and because the Youth Cinema Project grew and became what it is, that's how we were able to bring back La Leaf. Because now we have all the support and love from the industry in our community.
That's so crazy.
That's
really
cool. So it was beautiful in a full circle how La Leaf gave birth to the Youth Cinema Project, and then Youth Cinema Project brings birth back to La Leaf. And that's a testament of how things happen, because Sundance, people think of Sundance as this film festival. They forget that it was labs. Sundance was labs before it was ever a film festival. They were about supporting storytellers, and they were about supporting the development and promotion of film. Then they were able to start a film festival because their foundation was pure. And I think that's what happened to La Leaf. We were big. We were international. We had the very best, like the very first short films we had were by Guillermo del Toro and Alfonso Cuarón and Iñárritu.
That's amazing.
But we didn't have that heart until the Youth Cinema Project. Now that the Youth Cinema Project is the foundation of everything we do, now you'll see how we're going to grow.
Yeah, I can't wait to see that. That's going to be amazing. I didn't know that they were so directly linked, but I'm glad to hear it. That's amazing. That's like a parent does everything for the kid, and the kid grows up and does everything for the parent.
Yeah. So cute. And the parent moves in because we don't put our people in like old folks' homes. They come live in the familia.
Live with you forever.
Mom, move out. Okay, go ahead.
But shout out, Mom. We love you.
Oh my God. Let's talk about representation a little bit more, if you guys are down. Yeah. Is there anything that you're watching now or reading now or anything like representation in the media that you're consuming that you're impressed by?
I'm very, very impressed by Vida. Like, I think it took a badass like Tania Saracha to be like, I want my room to be 100% Latinx. Like, no one has ever done that.
It's very, very difficult. Yeah.
And beyond that, I'm very impressed with the Latina executive at Starz who did that. Because Tania doesn't get that opportunity if a Latina is not in the other side of the table, in the other side of the camera.
Yeah.
And that's the story that people don't really talk about. Like, not only do we need more talented storytellers, actors, directors, producers, but we need more people who are the decision makers. We need more managers. We need more agents. We need more executives. And I think that was the perfect storm that happened.
It really,
with Vida.
That was a wild one where, like, she didn't have to go around pitching the show. They went to her and were like, we're going to throw you into this show. That was, and I did a lot of research before coming to LA about how people get into writing rooms and how to become showrunners. I did a lot and never had I heard her a story like Tanya's.
But again, think about that Latina executive at Starz. She herself realized, and I heard the president of Starz say this about a few months ago, they realized that they needed a Latina showrunner. It did not exist, so they created it. Mm-hmm. That's what it takes. That's what it takes for this industry to say, we have to create them if it doesn't exist, as opposed to being like, yo, you just do it. It'll be fine.
Right. Exactly. No, that's amazing. I want it to happen more.
That's insight. I didn't have. So that's really interesting.
Yeah, it's a fascinating story. Is there anything else that catches your eye in the media right now?
Mm-hmm. As far as like media, music,
like representation, music too. Yeah, music. We could talk about music.
I mean, we gotta talk about Cardi B because she's Latina. She reps her Spanish language.
An Afro Latina.
Come on, her and Ozuna and those songs. I think that's that. Intersectionality is everything, I believe, and storytelling is finally getting there. Mm-hmm. And those Afro Latino stories are just waiting to be told. You know, those are exciting to me.
It's fantastic. I'm actually a little bit heartbroken because I went to Tropicalia and Cardi B canceled.
Oh no! Yeah,
but I love SZA, and that's who replaced her.
We stand. A queen who loves the ocean.
Loves. Okay. But yeah, Cardi B is like awesome, and I like that she hasn't like lost her like herself in this fame. You know what I mean? She still tried to throw that shoe at Nicki Minaj. She did not lose herself. And I'm here for it. Like, I don't want anybody to go and talk about, oh, my shoes are too good now. Like, no, throw it.
She's still getting that Fashion Nova money, okay? Look, I don't know what that budget is, but she getting that Fashion Nova money.
Let me tell
you,
to me, the reason why Cardi B is such a Latina is because when shit got real, she brought out the chancla and threw it. You know what I mean?
It's passed down from generation to generation. Like,
chancla, man. It just changed. It became a heel. Okay? First it was the chancla, now it's a whatever that was. Versace, Gucci, who knows?
Oh, gosh.
So that's kind of what I'm focusing on, is like what stories are being told in TV, because I love shows like Atlanta. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? And I feel like there's the Latino Atlanta, the Latinx Atlanta waiting to be told. And I think I wrote it. What? Come at me. those types of shows excite me. Like, I can't watch a regular traditional
general house of cards. Yeah, like over it.
I can't.
That's so like refreshing to hear you say that, because like it's how I feel all the time, where I'm just kind of like, I'm looking through Hulu and I'm like, I don't want to watch Modern Family again. Like, okay. I don't want to do this anymore. Yeah. And which is why I'm so glad that we have this podcast now.
ABC, and I'm glad you have this podcast too. ABC a few years back with one of their execs, they decided that they were going to be the home of multicultural family comedies. And I thought that was so brave. People didn't think it was going to work, and it worked like gangbusters for mm-hmm. them. They went after that gay community with The Real O'Neills. They went after the Asian community with Fresh Off the Boat. They went after the Black community with Black-ish. I was just like in awe of what they were doing.
That The Real O'Neills failed was kind of a bummer.
It is a bummer. But it was a funny show.
And they're the home of Shonda Rhimes, a freaking iconic, amazing human being.
Yeah. Come on. The pioneer of this. Well, in this kind of age. There's always been pioneers. She's fantastic. She's one of the many pioneers. Yeah.
So without knowing, like, they really did become the home of multicultural storytelling, right?
Yeah.
And
good
it was so amazing to see them rise because of it. Did you know that the show Power on Starz is the second most watched show on premium when Game of Thrones is on? And when it's not, it's the number one show.
What?
Isn't a black woman a showrunner?
Yeah, and it's the show by EP'd by 50 Cent, and it's about black folk, but we don't talk about it because we go, oh, it's black content. You know what I mean? Like, oh, no one watches
that's
that.
That's so trash.
I was like, oh,
their viewership is huge.
And I think that's why they were like, yo, we got to create a counterpart to this. And that's why they liked Vida. Mm-hmm. I was like, if we're having such huge success with the black community, let's do the same thing with the Latinx community.
I'm curious to see what their process was.
And I love networks who take chances like that. Mm-hmm. I really do.
Yeah.
That opened so many other doors.
Oh, yeah, I need to check out Power. That's one of the ones that I've been slacking on.
Oh, my girlfriend's obsessed with Power.
Really?
Yes.
I have to watch
I just
it.
Don't like 50 Cent. I want to root for him, and then he acts up on Twitter, and I'm just like, I can't.
Oh, dear.
But, yeah, the showrunner is a black woman, mm-hmm. so I think that's really fucking cool.
There's a new show called All American. I can't remember which network it's on.
The CW.
Is it CW? Okay. Yeah. All American, that one's pretty interesting. Their writer's room is black and brown and beautiful.
Yeah.
Like, their writer's room is fantastic. So, and that's why I started watching this show.
Tell me about that show. Mm-hmm.
All American's one that I've been, like, keeping my eye on.
Keeping your eye on. It just got back orders.
Really? Yeah. Oh, that's awesome.
That's really good. There was a hashtag going on Twitter called Show Is Your Room.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's when I saw it.
I really, really appreciate that. But again, if there are 400, mm-hmm. well, I mean, there might be 300, I'm not sure. But if there's hundreds of rooms, but only, like, what? 50 people showed their room.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Only like 20, 50 people showed their room.
We know why they showed.
Yeah. What's up?
Yeah. I'm pretty sure like most writers' rooms were just like, we're not gonna do that hashtag.
Yeah.
We're not gonna get ourselves in that situation. Yeah, definitely. I mean, but at the very least, what that hashtag did was show us who was putting up the right people.
Us nerds, we want to know that.
I'm like, okay, all stories, American it is.
We have to, not just the nerds, like the audiences consuming this content need to know so they know what they're supporting.
Yes.
How do you feel about audiences becoming like a lot more aware of that? So I feel like people used to just watch TV and it was good or it was bad, but now everybody's like, who's behind it? How is it created? It right?
Who's
people know the names of showrunners and staff writers and all this stuff. Like that wasn't a thing.
I didn't even know what a showrunner was.
Right. They didn't know. They don't know that there's a difference between directing in film and directing in TV. Like, these are two different things. And they don't know that. But now they're starting to.
Oh, my God. When I first met with Gina Rodriguez, right, when we were talking about the show we're going to do together, she's like, Rafa, I want you to be a showrunner. And I was like, oh, that's amazing. And I was like, what's a showrunner? I had no clue. But that's how forward-thinking she is. Like, she already saw that for me. And I didn't even know what it was. I could not even imagine it for myself.
Wow. That's fantastic.
It's crazy.
But hey, she has that vision. I mean, I'm thinking you can totally get there.
Yeah.
I see it.
We see it.
From your mouth to my Chola God's ears.
Hey. My Chola
God's. That's fantastic. Is there anything that you're working on that you can tell us about developing or current projects that you're working on?
Anything you can share?
I can't really share except for like what's already been published, right? My show Illegal, that's changed the name to Rafa the Great because that's what like my producing partners wanted. I'm always, as you can tell from a show called New York Back Chink, I'm all about in your face, let's do it. I wanted to tackle the word illegal because I believe no human being is illegal.
Nope.
But they're like, let's not lead with the politics. Let's lead with the heart. So then, okay, I was like, okay, you got me.
Good wording.
Especially for writers who are like super consciously aware, who are like social justice warriors, it's important that we always lead with our heart and not our politics. And that's really hard to do.
It's so hard. God, it's so hard.
I think Pose is doing a really good job at leading with their heart.
Pose is fantastic.
Pose is leading with that heart. And it's connecting. It's connecting.
Mm-hmm. So that's the one that we're going to be shopping around, hopefully find a home very, very soon. And well, I will say that I'm very excited to report that I was able to write and produce my first solo episode for Jane the Virgin.
And I just finished it
this past week.
So that's coming up in this next season.
It'll be in the next season.
You'll have to tell us which episode so we can watch it out. We'll watch it live. We'll live tweet, you know?
Live tweet.
And, I wish I could say something about it, but I have two words for you. Truck stop.
Ooh. I don't know. All I could think was bajo la misma luna. Like, that's all that came to mind.
Like, truck stop. Okay, word. Beef jerky.
I think there's some LGBTQ listeners from LA who know exactly what that is.
Oh, shit. Okay. I'm going to have to talk to some people. We're going to have to digest that. We're just going to start a whole theory.
I'm just going to become like one of those crime podcasts. I'm like, okay, what is this? What?
God, that's going to be fun. Well, thank you so much for being here. I want to tell our listeners where they can follow you, where we can follow your progress.
Yeah. For me on Instagram and Twitter, I'm Mr. Rafael Agustin, and the organizations are obviously La Leaf and the Youth Cinema Project, which are at Youth Cinema and at La Leaf.
We will link all of it on our website, cabronasychingonas.com.
And I insist that there be a Cabron y Chingon from Hollywood segment at least once a year, where we can talk about the updates of what's going on. Yes. So your listeners are well
informed. We're down. I'll mark it on our calendar. Exactly. We'll November
10th.
I love it.
That's fantastic. We actually had one episode called Cabrones y Chingones. One of our first episodes.
Woohoo! Yeah.
When we brought in just like friends of ours.
Okay.
We're just starting out. But I'm completely down. Yeah, let's do a yearly update here and maybe like a post La Leaf update.
That'd
be cool. That's it. That's it. We'll do it during La Leaf.
Okay. Yeah. Even better.
Even better.
Fantastic. Yeah. I'll be like, everybody show up. We'll be here.
Yeah, oh my God. How cool is that? So your audiences could actually like spend time with you. That'd be awesome. Let's do that.
I was so happy when at La Leaf, I'm sidetracking, but at La Leaf, I did meet a couple of listeners and I was like, oh, hi.
That's amazing.
I did a couple of them. It was really, really nice.
What I love is that you all are from Dallas and... Aren't they from Vegas? Like Latinos?
Latinos are just from Vegas, yeah.
So that's why we need like the annual just meeting ground so mm-hmm. that we could all just interface with one another.
That'd be great if all the podcasters could just show up to La Leaf. We could all just chill together.
That'd be lit.
I'm down for
Let's
that.
Let's do it. I got you. All right.
We're sweet.
Down. Sign us up.
All right, everybody stay.
Okay. Stay I'm flying out. It's done.
It's done.
You can stay with me. That's fine.
Okay, shut up.
All right, cool. Well, thank you so much for being here once again. We can't wait to see what you do next. Like, I have my fingers crossed for your Rafa the Great.
You're amazing.
This is
going
to be great.
Thank you.
Title of the episode. This is going to be an easy one.
You're going to do a deep dive. You're going to do a deep
for
dive.
For sure.
And it was an honor, so thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. This is so cool.
All right, thank you guys for listening. As always, follow us at CYC Podcast, and we'll see you next week.
Bye.